most babies born premature have some sort of sensory processing challenges. It might not be diagnosed sensory processing disorder. It might not present as an extreme case, but most of our kiddos that we treat, that we learn about, that we're following, have some sort of sensory processing challenge.
Welcome to the Sensory Project Show with Rachel and Jessica. We're here to share all things sensory, occupational therapy, parenting, self-care, and overall health and wellness from a therapist's perspective, providing raw, honest, fun ideas and strategies for parents and families to implement into daily life. Thank you so much for joining us. Oh, and we wanted to remind you guys that we have our membership site, the Sensory Project Club, and it is alive and thriving. We are sharing resources, handouts, templates, guides, how-to videos. Oh my word, we could go on and on because we are sharing all the things with our members. So if you want to become a member, just go to thesensoryprojectclub.com and get signed up. We cannot wait to see you guys in there.
Just a quick reminder before we get started. If you haven't listened to our interview with Alex Doman from Advanced Brain Technologies yet, you need to check it out ASAP. Because after we interviewed him, we teamed up with him and his team to bring you guys a special offer on any of their products, including the listening program. Just head over to our website, thesensoryproject.com/pages/podcast to get started today. And then you can use our code, thesensoryproject, for a discount on any of their programs. We're both certified providers and can help you experience the amazing benefits that come from ABT's programs.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Sensory Project Show. This episode is a little bit different, and this is why.
So we decided to do a live Q&A on our Instagram pages, and we are recording it at the same time.
So hopefully, if you are tuning into the live video today, you'll be able to hear your question and our answer to the question on the podcast when this goes live.
So enjoy.
We're live.
We're also recording right now. So this is going to be a podcast episode.
Yep. And we have kind of gathered all the questions together that we've gotten, and we have a lot. So this could either be a really long episode or an even longer episode, depending if you guys pop on, ask us any more questions, but we've got a lot to talk about.
I know.
Today.
We had to stop because I was like, that's too much. That's too many questions.
She's overwhelmed.
Very overwhelmed. Like, dang, you guys have a lot of questions, which is good.
A lot of good questions,
you
too.
You guys need to ask all the questions. Mm-hmm. So if you have a question while you're watching, feel free to throw it out there and we'll answer it. But should we start?
Yeah.
Okay. So first question, how do I know when my child needs sensory input? Well, we all need sensory input.
We do. Yeah. I'm glad you started with that. I am, because, you know, the world is, it's a sensory world, and we are inside and out designed to process the natural senses that occur in our environment. So how to identify when your child needs sensory input, it varies, honestly, and I'm sorry that that's the worst answer ever, but it varies.
Yeah, all kids are different. Yeah, every kid is different. If you have multiple kids, I guarantee you that one kid is 100% different than the other kid. Like, siblings are going to be different too. Their sensory needs are going to be different. So you just have to notice when your child is overwhelmed or underwhelmed. And it also depends on the situation. So if your kiddo is running around in circles right before they need to go to school, they probably need some sensory input.
Or if they come home from school and they are melting into a giant puddle on the floor, they probably could use some sensory input because most kids hold it together while they're at school and they're not getting enough sensory input. If you think of it like, you know, a glass, right? We have our glass here, and so the glass is maybe half full throughout the day of sensory input. And, you know, the kid's glass is full, which means like it's almost going to overflow. So they need a lot of sensory input. So you give them that input and then they can kind of drink whatever's in their glass and then it goes back down to a normal level. Was that an interesting analogy?
I was trying to picture it while you were talking.
Did it make sense?
I think so.
Maybe.
Depends on what everyone else thinks of it. I know. Or not.
That's in my head what I was thinking. You know, these kids have these high thresholds for sensory input. They need to meet those thresholds. And they need to almost get that input to feel normal, like we're feeling right now.
I do. It's true. So hopefully that makes sense.
Yes.
How do I know when my child is overwhelmed and what can I do?
Oof.
So your child is overwhelmed if, or if you can tell if your child is overwhelmed, if they're having a meltdown, if they shut down completely and won't talk, won't say anything, won't do anything.
If they elope or avoid the task.
Trying to run away,
Sometimes it presents as anxiety. And I hear of, you know, kids getting diagnosed with anxiety. Sometimes it's anxiety, truly. Sometimes it is a challenge modulating sensory input. So they can't regulate the amount of sensory input. Oftentimes we see this with, you know, vestibular input and tactile input. Sometimes auditory input as well.
Go away.
But when a kid can't modulate that input, let's say vestibular input, they don't want their feet to leave the ground, or they're uncomfortable or anxious when their feet leave the ground, it's going to present as anxiety, and your child's going to be overwhelmed. They're going to scream, they're going to cry, they're going to refuse, they're going to hug onto you anytime you, you know, want to play a game with them, or they, you want them to hop on a swing or something like that. That's pretty common. And same with, you know, tactile input. If the clothes are too tight or the tags are bothering them, or they're refusing to touch a novel texture, they scream and cry if glue touches their hands. Those are those overwhelmed responses when these kids can't handle that sensory input.
Yeah. So then if you know that your child is overwhelmed, what do you do? I think the first thing is identify why, what's causing them to feel overwhelmed. So is it the tactile input? Is it because they don't want to be on the swing? Is it because they've held it together all day at school and now they just can't hold it together anymore? Because the cause of the overwhelm will determine what you do. But I think a good place to start is with proprioceptive input.
When in doubt, prop it out.
That's right. That's always just a good way to start. Validate their feelings. Let them know you're there for them, that you want to help them. That you
empathize.
Love them.
Yeah, empathy is huge. Yeah.
Say, you know, I see that you're really mad. I see that you're really sad. What can we do? How can I help you? Sometimes the words don't work. And so you might have to help them to leave the situation and take a break to calm down. But all the kids are so different.
Yeah, they are. It's hard to
hate it.
I know. I love it. Give me a new challenge. I love it. It's like a mystery we get to solve every
day. That's true. You're right. Hopefully that answers that question.
Okay.
We just got a question on the gram that says, what are some sensory input tips for release? I don't know what you mean. Release of
thinking,
what?
This is what I'm thinking the question means. You know, when you want to release sensory input, like you have a lot of energy, maybe? Is that what you're meaning?
Catherine, what do you mean by release?
Like if a kiddo is running around in circles and they're being wild and crazy, they need to release that energy, quote unquote.
Get it out of their system.
We'll answer that question if that's what you mean before you can get back to us, but what their body is telling them is they need vestibular input. If they're moving and they're seeking and they're running all over the place, they need to meet that threshold. Like that glass is full of input. So you've got to meet them where they're at, which means give them those movement activities, the somersaults, the jumping, the crashing, the
rolling
ring
over
around
a ball.
A Rosie, yes.
Oh, ring around the Rosie is a good one. Yeah. Especially on a trampoline.
Yes.
That's a super good way to do that one.
So give them that input that they need, and then you can do those proprioceptive activities and you can calm them down. But if you try to do those calming proprioceptive activities while they're, you know, experiencing that need to release, it's not going to work.
No, it won't. That's true.
You have to listen to what their cues are telling you. And in that moment, it's, I need more. So you have to give them more.
Yes.
Before you can bring them back down.
Totally.
Okay. Okay. If that wasn't the meaning of your question,
let us know.
Just clarify. Thanks. That's a good question.
Okay, next one. I feel like we've gotten this question before, too.
Yes.
We've had a couple people ask us what trainings we've done, what courses we've used and taken mm-hmm. ourselves, what our favorite continuing ed courses are. Sensational Brain.
We love Sensational Brain. They have so many great continuing ed courses, and they're all like short and digestible. Mm-hmm. And you want to learn about a specific topic, find it, you watch the video, and you have a lot of new ideas and a lot of new activities. We've also taken, I've taken a lot from PESI.
So have I, yeah. Mm-hmm. PESI has really good ones from really good therapists, other yes. OTs that mm-hmm. are like so good.
Yes. So that's PESI mm-hmm. is the company.
They're really good. Clinician's View.
Yeah.
Is outdated.
Yeah.
But I think some of them are still good.
The information is good. Yeah. It's just... It's not as fun to watch.
Yeah, they are a little bit more boring.
Yeah. but, you know, we were talking about this question before we jumped on here, and we both agreed, you know, we have been occupational therapy assistants for about 6 years, mm-hmm. and so much of what we've learned to get where we are now is through experience, mm-hmm. through mentorship, through trial and error.
Collaboration with each other, mm-hmm. other therapists.
Exactly. And asking questions mm-hmm. and not being afraid to ask questions. And if we don't know the answer to something, find it, yeah. you know, and tell our families, look, I don't know the answer. I've never dealt with that before, but I'm going to find the answer. And then we do the research and then we come back and we say, hey, this worked. And then guess what? That answer works for... you know, 30 other kids.
I still do that mm-hmm. to this day where parents will ask me a question and I'm like, you know, I'm not 100% sure about that. So I'm going to go write myself a note to look it up mm-hmm. and I will get back to you next time.
Absolutely.
Or I'll text you. And then mm-hmm. I do.
But we use a lot of research from AJOT, so the American Journal of Occupational Therapy. And then I want to say it's NCBI or NBCI?
Oh, it's NCBI.
NCBI. They have a lot of great research studies on there as well mm-hmm. that we'll find. But honestly, like, the burning questions about why mm-hmm. are the things that I've dove most into. But I jumped into those and I found out so much because I'll connect the dots between a client and I'll say, gosh, this keeps happening. I keep hearing this. There has to be a correlation. Why does this keep happening? Mm-hmm. And so that has been huge for me and my own research is trying to figure out the why and then mm-hmm. getting to the bottom of the why. And it's easier to help the families when you can say, hey, this could be why. Mm-hmm. Now let's work on boom, 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 boom.
Totally.
So there you go.
There you go. Okay, we got another question on the gram. Says, I got my son a weighted vest, but it's been difficult to get him to keep it on. He uses a weighted blanket at night, but wondering mm-hmm. what some strategies are for helping him adapt. So we do have a podcast episode all about weight, all things weighted.
Weighted items.
Weighted yeah. items and mm-hmm. some strategies and tricks to help your child want to use their vest mm-hmm. or their weighted blanket, whatever they have. Yeah. But I think the first thing is like, don't force it.
Yeah.
Obviously it mm-hmm. has to be their choice.
Yeah.
If your kiddo's old enough, you can talk about why mm-hmm. the weighted vest is beneficial. It can help your body feel happy and feel calm. Mm-hmm. It can help your body sit down at the table for a little bit. You know, if they're not able to verbally communicate with you in that way, then it's going to be
video feedback.
Video. Thank you. I blinked for a second.
Video feedback is great, taking videos and then watching it back and forth, going along with what Jessica was saying. We do have a social story on the website, thesensoryproject.com.
Sensoryprojectclub.com.
I think it's on both.
It might be on both.
Yeah, but it's a weighted blanket and a weighted vest social story. Mm-hmm. So you can download that if your kid is old enough and you can read it through them. And it just mm-hmm. kind of goes through, I have this weighted vest. It talks about why it's different because mm-hmm. one of the things that we hear most often is these kids, you know, they put on this jacket and it looks like a normal jacket, but it's weird. It's heavy and it feels different. Mm-hmm. Some kids immediately are like, oh gosh, this is just what I need. And then some kids are like, whoa, this is different. Mm-hmm. I don't know how to adjust to it. So using a visual schedule, getting a picture of the weighted vest and like handing it to the kiddo so they can see, oh, okay, I need to put my weighted vest on. Set your timer.
Yeah. A visual timer is a mm-hmm. great one. And say when the timer's all done, you can take your vest off.
Yeah.
but also letting them have some of that control too and say, okay, do you want to wear it for 1 minute or 2 minutes? Mm-hmm. Or, you know, giving them a little bit of that control.
Yeah. But it'll take time. If your kiddo is already a little bit hesitant, it'll take time for them to get used to it. And
that's okay.
And, you know, just keep it nearby them. So if they're playing on the floor with Legos, just set it next to them so they see it and they can get used to having it around them. And, yeah, listen to that podcast episode that we did.
There you go. How often do we collab with speech and PT?
Mm-hmm.
We don't, in our clinic that we work at, we don't have a PT there with us.
We've actually never worked with PTs in the same clinic before.
Mm-hmm. Yes. We've always worked closely with speech therapists, speech language pathologists, and I love collabing with an SLP because they have knowledge in areas that I don't know a lot about, mm-hmm. and so they're able to give me advice on communicating with a kid, how, you know, what's a great way to help this child request what they want, mm-hmm. and then vice versa. We have some speech therapists who will ask us questions of like, look, my kid won't sit down to talk to me. What can I do? And so then we're able to give some ideas for them too.
Yeah.
So as much as possible.
Absolutely. And keeping the line of communication open. Mm-hmm. So, you know, maybe, you know, we'll see kiddos back to back. So they'll maybe have speech first, or they'll have OT first, and then they'll go to speech and vice versa and say, hey, this worked really well with the kid today. Maybe you can continue it on. You know, maybe they're using a weighted vest. Say, hey, this kiddo's using a weighted vest. It helped them a lot today. Just make sure you take it off at, and we tell them what time.
Because mm-hmm.
I just saw that we had a question come through about how long to keep a weighted vest on and if they lose their effectiveness. And yes, their body can lose, or their body can lose the weighted vest. Oh my word!
Their body will adapt to the weighted vest to the point, almost like painkillers. Like if you're taking painkillers, I'm just saying.
It's a great example.
You're taking painkillers for something on a consistent basis, and all of a sudden you're like, man, I need more. It's because your body has adapted to mm-hmm. what you're giving it, and it needs more to get that same effect. So weighted items are very similar in that your body will adapt to what you're giving it, and so you do need to keep an eye on how much you use them and how long.
Yes. So I typically recommend 30 minutes on, 30 minutes off as needed throughout the day. So as long as they're having it on and then taking it off consistently,
mm-hmm.
that would be great.
And the other thing too is that proprioceptive input will typically stay in your system to help you stay regulated for up to 2 hours.
Yes.
If it's good proprioceptive input. But our kids, mm-hmm. especially our seekers, it's going to be a lot less than 2 hours. So they're going to need it more frequently
mm-hmm.
than those 2 hours. So like the 30 on, 30 off is a good rule of thumb to start.
Absolutely.
But then, you know, decrease the amount of time they have it on and increase the amount of time that they have it off slowly.
Yeah.
I think journaling is a great option. If you're using a weighted vest, and make sure you're writing down every single day when they're using it.
Mm-hmm.
Was it effective? When did they take it off? All of it.
Yeah. So a therapist that I know, she's awesome. Mornings with an OT mom, Danielle, she actually created a tracking sheet for schools because she is an OT in the school district, and she's been using some of our weighted vests in her school, and so she's been tracking it and having the teachers track it. So maybe I should like share that with you guys, and you guys can start tracking. Yeah. And then we had another question about...
Yeah, you go ahead and answer that one. I saw that.
What weighted vest do y'all like? Let me tell you.
How long have you been... I'm sorry. I'm not going to be rude, but how long have you been following us? Because I feel like...
Oh, shoot.
You know what we do, right?
No, we actually make weighted vests, and they are fashionable weighted vests. I have one here. Let me grab it so I can just show you.
Mornings with an OT mom?
Yes.
That's who we're talking about?
Yes.
You want her tracking sheet? I'm sorry. I wasn't trying to be rude. Thank you for asking, because there are no dumb questions. So thank you for asking.
Just gives me a reason to show off my fun weighted vest. So this is what they look like. Ta-da! And so they've got the pockets on the inside with snaps, no Velcro, because I hate Velcro. And then they have...
It's not durable.
...pockets here in the top. So there's little shoulder weights that go in the front and in the back.
I'm so glad you're too.
Oh, yay! Your world is going to be rocked.
It's fine.
So,
I
just
don't think before favorites. I speak, so it just came out.
Those are our favorite weighted vests. And, Thanks for tuning in for the first time. We're so happy you're here.
If you keep tuning in, you'll see me word vomit again. Don't worry.
Oh, thank you.
Do you ship internationally?
We do. Yeah. Call me.
Okay. Okay. This next one. My kiddo has braces, just got braces, and their sensory quirk is chewing, but now they cannot. Well, I call BS because your child can still chew.
Again, with the word vomit.
Just comes out.
They might not be able to chew the same way.
It might hurt.
It might feel different.
You're right.
They can't chew gum. That would kill me.
I chewed gum when I had braces.
Try finding like a chewy, like a pop tube. That's what you should try is a pop tube because it's not like really hard rubber and it's hollow. It's a pop tube. I'm trying to think of where you can get them from. You can just Google pop tubes, I believe. And you can just get the cord, cut it, and then maybe tie it to a zipper or bracelet or just hold on to it and you can just pop it. But yeah, braces are tricky.
Go to ARC Therapeutic. Mm-hmm. They have all the chew stuff.
And maybe just give more like food input. So
more crunchy food.
Crunchy food, sour food, salty food. Just give more intensely flavored food items. Mm-hmm. And
probe it out.
Yeah.
Proprioceptive input all day long.
Yeah. Tongue to the roof of the mouth, maybe.
Were you doing it too?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. 3-year-old has sensory processing disorder, and the new 8-month-old is showing signs. And the signs are severe feeding challenges. The child gags on everything.
So your response when you saw this question was? Mm-hmm.
So initially, gagging is normal. Mm-hmm. When you present a new texture, a new flavor to an 8-month-old, it's new and it's different, and gagging is a normal response. Mm-hmm. You know, you present the food item a couple of more times and they should be able to modulate it. If they continue to gag after having the new food presented to them, then we could call it more of like a tactile aversion, right? So we thought about continuing to present it. Mm-hmm. We talked about adding a little bit more crunchy food, and you have to be careful with an 8-month-old though.
Yeah, so obviously, yeah.
Mm-hmm. But you could always follow. Can 8-month-olds have veggie straws?
I mean, maybe, because they're going to start munching, and those dissolve.
Mm-hmm. But like a crunchy puff, if you could get that to them afterwards, that they could suck on, at least get some proprioception.
Messy food play. This kiddo needs, I mean, all kids, need to be playing with food with their hands. So instead of just putting applesauce in a little bowl and a spoon, just dump the applesauce on their high chair tray and let them play in it. And they'll lick their fingers. And what that does too, you know, obviously it's going to work on the tactile processing and modulation, mm-hmm. but what it's going to do is give them the control of how much they're putting in their mouth. Mm-hmm. So that's another thing to look for is if you are spoon feeding your infant and they're gagging, then decrease the amount of food that you have on the spoon. Mm-hmm. Change the spoon.
Yeah. Or you could lean more towards like a baby-led weaning style, mm-hmm. where you're giving them like long rod-shaped type-shaped foods. Does mm-hmm. that make sense? So the child is independently putting what they can in their mouth, mm-hmm. and they will spit out and gag out what they can't manage if they can't manage it. But that gives them the opportunity to tolerate what they can and get rid of what they can't. And, you know, spitting out food is normal. Mm-hmm. That's okay. Yep. And
it'll be normal for the first couple of years.
Mm-hmm. And getting the opportunities for messy play. Mm-hmm. Messy play all day. We've got an episode on that one as well.
We also have a couple episodes on feeding and sensory mm-hmm. and feeding.
Yep.
Go follow Nicole.
Yep.
Kids OT Help.
Kids OT Help.
Kids OT Help, because she is like the baby feeding genius guru lady.
She has a lot of good information.
So go follow her for sure.
And then the other thing that, I don't remember who taught us this. We haven't tried it yet. But if a child is gagging, kind of reset their system by just giving them a quick blow in the face. Yep. So try it. Let us know if it works. If it doesn't, try something different.
I think the other big thing too is that you want to make sure your reaction is small.
Yes.
If your child gags and you have a big reaction, it's going to cause them to have a negative association with the food mm-hmm. they just gagged on.
Yes.
Versus if they gag on a food and you don't really react, everything's fine. Mm-hmm. They're not choking.
Yep.
You know, they're going to kind of gag on it and then they're going to move on.
Mm-hmm. OT mama of twins, she shares a lot of gagging versus choking mm-hmm. on her Instagram page because she has 3 under the age of like 2, I think. Yeah, and so she's always very cautious about choking and recognizing.
Superwoman.
Yeah, she's recognizing the difference between gagging and choking.
Mm-hmm.
So that is a good account to follow.
And a gag is just your body's natural response to something that is too much.
Mm-hmm.
Too much food, too much texture, mm-hmm. too much whatever.
It's a safety mechanism.
It is, absolutely. So gagging's not a bad thing. It's what we do with it.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Good question.
Research on weighted vests. Oh, we did talk about weighted vests a little bit already.
Yes.
This
is a tricky one because, and this is what Danielle and I were really talking about, the research that is lacking with weighted vests because there just haven't been enough studies done with large groups
mm-hmm.
Across different settings. And so that's kind of where we are struggling in the research department with weighted vests. There are some articles out there that kind of give a little bit of background information and kind of talk about how to use it. There was a continuing ed course that I took. Her name was Jenny Clark. And she talked a lot about weighted vests and how to use them in that continuing ed video. And shared some research articles there as well. We'll find them and share them somewhere. I think
yeah.
they're posted in that podcast episode.
Probably. I also think too that just like if you have a kiddo who is seeking input, try it. Like
mm-hmm.
it's not going to hurt them.
Yeah.
If you just try a weighted vest or a weighted blanket, just try it and
mm-hmm.
see how
it
reacts.
But also try it consistently. If
yeah,
you try it once and it doesn't work, don't just say, oh, they don't work. Weighted vests are so stupid.
Yeah.
Weighted blankets are so silly. Try multiple times. Get consistent, and then, you know, after you try for a month and maybe they're not responding how we think, then we're like, oh, okay.
If it's been a month and you're not seeing the positive effects that you want, then that might be a sign that it's not right for that kid.
Yep.
But in our experience, we have seen lots of positive results with weighted vests.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go.
And all things weighted, not just weighted vests, too.
Yeah, totally weighted, vibrating stuffed animals.
Mm-hmm. Weighted pillows,
mm-hmm.
ankle weights, wrist weights,
mm-hmm.
weighted blankets, yep. weighted shoulder wraps, weighted hats.
The weighted ankle weights, I love the weighted ankle weights because they're so hidden
mm-hmm.
and they're just so grounding. Pointing out the important difference between gagging and choking as well as how the reactions, yeah, the reactions impact the child's experience
they do.
So
yes.
much because our children, especially at 8 months old, that first year of life, they're learning how to imitate and they're
oh,
watching
yes.
everything you do.
Oh, yes.
Even just a facial expression is going to impact. Like
mm-hmm.
if they gag and you're like,
yeah,
and they see you react like that, even though you didn't say anything or do anything, they see that reaction, that's going to impact them for sure.
Same with how you like place down the food or you offer new foods
mm-hmm.
to a child. If you say, well, this is new and different. You might not like it,
ooh.
But you need to try it.
Can I tell you a story?
Red flag.
Let me tell you a story,
yes,
guys.
Let's hear the story.
My son loves vegetables. Gave it to him as an infant, you know, as he's grown up and stuff. And I feel like I'm very fortunate that he loves vegetables so
mm-hmm.
much, right? But he does. So this is probably like 2 years ago, 2-3 years ago. We're at the grocery store. Bought some kale. We're in the checkout line, and the lady's, you know, scanning it. She looks at my son, and she's like, oh, I bet you hate this green lettuce. And I was like, I almost, like, swore at her because I was like, you cannot say that to my kid. First of all, he does like it. But if you tell him he doesn't like it, he might change his mind. So shut up. Sorry. I, like, get very, very passionate about this because
yeah.
I'm like, if you tell your child, this is different, hey, you might not like this, oh, man, you tell your kid's therapist, you can try it, but they might not like it. Yeah. You're setting them up.
Absolutely.
So I think that it's very important for all of us, because we all do it. I've done it before too.
Absolutely. Not perfect.
We all do it. We just need to be more aware of what we're saying to our children, in front of our children, because it does affect what they think and do.
It does. Yeah.
So anyway, I didn't offend anyone again, because I've already offended one person today.
I don't think you offended anyone. They need to learn to embrace the honesty and appreciate the bluntness. We don't sugarcoat it, guys. You should know this by now.
I didn't swear, so be thankful for that.
Yes.
Okay, we have another question.
Okay, how do you guys teach the zones to older kiddos who are higher levels? Oh, this is like my favorite thing to do.
First of all, that is great because they are the easy ones.
They are. I know. Yes. So typically in like our first couple of sessions working with the kiddos, I mean, we have all the visuals up on the wall of our clinic right now. And we talk about it. We introduce it in the very first couple of sessions and say, this is the zones of regulation. This is what it does. We go through each zone and then we ask them to identify what zone they're in. Mm-hmm. And then we try to have them identify an experience that they felt in each zone. So tell me a time that you've been in the blue zone. And then I will always say, you know, I have been in the blue zone last week because I was feeling really sick and I had the flu, so I was not doing well. And now I'm in the green zone because I'm feeling healthy and happy. And so we go through each of those different zones with them, giving them, I almost said excuses, giving them
examples.
Yeah. What do you do?
Listen.
Yeah.
It's a conversation. If your kid's a higher functioning kid, you can have a conversation while they're, you know, in the ball pit or while they're in a swing or while they're doing something that they really enjoy doing.
Yes.
You can just sit and have a conversation, and it's a positive conversation. Mm-hmm. It's not a, it's bad to be in the red zone. It's bad to be XYZ. Like, it's not bad. We're all there.
Yes.
And I think that's huge too, is reminding them that we all have the same emotions and the same feelings, and we all experience them, and it's okay to experience them.
That's important that you said that. It's okay to be mad. It's not okay to hit when you're mad. And then we like to make some sort of tactile or tangible goodie for them to take home. So sometimes we'll make little stoplights with a little clothespin that they can go back and forth between. But also I'm going to build on this one a little bit. We like to use the unthinkables for the older kiddos as well, because it takes that, you made a mistake feeling off of the kiddo. So instead of saying you were mean to your mom, that's not okay, you're in the red zone, it would be like, oh man, it sounds like Mean Gene invaded your brain. How can you defeat Mean Gene? So you're, instead of saying you messed up, child, it's Mean Gene invaded your brain and made you do this.
And it's kind of fun.
So
your brain is a superhero.
Yeah. How are we going to defeat Mean Gene?
Yes.
So she doesn't make you do any more mean things. Mm-hmm. And so then they're like, oh man, I don't feel quite as bad because I made a mistake, and we all make mistakes, and
I have the power to change it.
Absolutely. And I can be in control.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I do like the unthinkables. They're kind of fun.
Yeah. So many good ones. You guys, these questions are so good. Yay.
Okay. So someone says that they know an adult picky eater who has a tendency to make faces when your kids eat sardines. I would make a face with sardines.
Look at my face.
I don't like that
I'm
at
so
all.
I'm so sorry. Oh, no.
Neutral facial expression. Neutral facial expression.
Yes, I know. I actually had to do that to my mother-in-law. Sorry if you're watching mother-in-law, but she had presented something to my niece and was like, oh, that's so gross. And I literally told her to stop. I'm like, don't do that.
Don't do that. Walk away.
I know.
Oh, Ash, thank you. I'm so glad that you see her comment. She said thank you. Thank you.
You are, love you.
Killing it. Gosh. Killing it. Okay, so we have two questions over here. This one came in first, though.
Okay.
What are some tips to encourage an older kiddo, first grade, to encourage them to wear to use their home sensory room and tools? Well, first of all, it has to be things they like, right?
Yep.
So if you have the sensory tools that they don't actually like, well, they're not going to use them.
Mm-hmm.
So you just want to make sure that that kiddo actually likes those sensory tools and that they're fun and motivating.
Yes. Our sensory diet crash course actually talks a lot about different ways of incorporating stuff. Like, we talk about sensory sticks, and we give different ways of incorporating the sensory activities into, like, a visual schedule or, like, an actual sensory diet. Because if you just give them all these things and say, okay, go play.
Too many.
And then maybe they have poor praxis going along with it, so they can't come up with an idea to create something to do with their toys. They're just going to sit there and look at it and not know how to engage. But you should also go in there and play with them.
Yes.
And
demonstrate.
Yeah. And say, oh, let's set up this crazy cool obstacle course. And, you know, if you have swings, jump off onto a crash pad and then bear crawl and then just, and then set up a video camera so you can record your activity and then watch it. You just have to make it fun.
Yes.
And, you know, some kiddos, especially the ones that we see, struggle with that independent play and that, that praxis component of being able to come up with an idea.
Yes.
And carry it out. So
doing it with them is huge. And the video feedback helps with that praxis as well. I think, man, first graders just need to play. So you just need to turn it into a play thing. And then after they enjoy it, then you can start talking about, how did that activity make you feel? Did it make you feel happy? Did it make you feel super silly? And then once you kind of establish that, then you're going to go to a moment when they're having a meltdown. And they're having a meltdown, and then you can help them to go use those tools that make them feel happy.
Yeah, I like that.
Okay, we have a lot over here. How about parent report out to...
I noticed that they get upset at times and probably feel weird about you talking about them to their parents.
Like having the kid leave when you're talking to the parents, is that what they...
Yeah, I try not to talk about my older kiddos in front of the parents. I'll either say, hey, I'll send you an email, or hey, I'll send you a text message, or I'll, you know, if the kiddo is not right there, I'll kind of talk in code and be like, yeah, we had a really great day. You know, and I'll say, we had a lot of fun. We got to work on a lot of things. Yeah. And then I'll say, this is what we really struggled with. And this is what I want you to work on at home. So
if you have the ability to have like a waiting area where there's like a play place for the kid and they can engage in something while you step away, maybe, you know, the other side of the room and talk in a soft voice. I think that's key as therapists too, is like when we're debriefing, especially if there's a lot of people there, it can get really loud and really hard to hear. So I think that everyone just needs to have a calm voice when you're talking to parents. My daughter has some sensory integration challenges. Trigger seems to be loud noises. She will tend to raise her voice, so she's the loudest in the room. So you're saying she wants attention. She's five.
Or she'll have a meltdown by screaming.
Well, first of all, you don't want to give her any attention when she starts screaming.
This is my favorite, and I know the podcast people can't do it, but I do this.
Yeah, you just sit there
and I don't look. Yes, look, and I wait, and I just calmly say, you know, I will wait till you're ready. You let me know when you're ready.
A good one is like, I can't understand you when you're screaming.
And and sometimes, you know, it'll get worse before it gets better.
It will.
But if you don't feed into it and you say, oh, I can't believe you're doing this, let's go take a break. If you just say, let me know when you're ready. I would love to talk to you when you're calm. Sometimes it takes 10 minutes. Sometimes it takes 2 minutes.
And lots and lots of positive praise when she uses unexpected voice volume. I love how you're talking to me right now. I can really hear you and understand you. Thank you so much. Whatever it is.
Yes.
And if she's... raise her voice so she's the loudest in the room. So maybe she's getting overstimulated by all the noise in the room, too. So maybe she just needs a couple of breaks every once in a while if she's in a really busy environment.
And I was thinking maybe that's her way of tuning out all of the loud input in the room is by her screaming. So maybe even noise-canceling headphones might be helpful.
Yeah.
Like we said at the beginning, trial and error with these kiddos.
Yeah, and see what works. Try it multiple times. I think she's five, so she might like some cool headphones. Like the little earplugs can be beneficial sometimes if they tolerate them. But I also say, like, take a break.
Yeah.
If she's in a really loud environment, she starts to kind of talk too loud. Say, oh, hey, let's go get a drink of water.
Yeah.
And you leave the room for a minute into a quiet area, and then you go back.
The other thing, have you tried the listening program with her before? If she has some auditory processing challenges, maybe that could help her.
Yep. So Advanced Brain Technologies, the listening program. Go check that out. We have a code.
We do.
What's our code?
The Sensory Project.
So if you sign it up, sign up. make sure you put in the code the Sensory Project, all yes. one word. Can't see that on the podcast. It's fine. Okay, kids have a hard time with no. It's come up from parents this past week like 4 different times. If a child has trouble accepting the answer no, it's probably because the parent said yes one time. And so now the child's like, oh, well, maybe they'll say yes. Maybe they'll say yes.
See, and I'm thinking maybe the parent says no too much. So instead of, you know, if your child asks for a candy bar, instead of saying no, you can't have a candy bar, say, you know what? That's a great question. There is a great time to have a candy bar, and that is after dinner. So why don't you go pick out what candy bar you want after dinner, and we will save it for then.
There you go.
So you're not saying no. You're saying not right now.
Yeah.
So changing your verbiage and saying, yeah, sure, you can have a candy bar. You go pick it out, and we'll save it for dinner, and we'll set the timer so you can see when you're going to get it.
There you go.
And I'm really excited for you to have this candy bar. Maybe you should share a bite with me later.
And then if they have a meltdown because you're not going to let them eat it in the car, that's okay. They can have a meltdown and be mad about it. You just remind them that they're going to be able to have it after dinner or tomorrow or whenever it is.
Yeah.
And maybe don't take it away. Don't expect them to stop being mad about it.
And say, oh, you don't get your candy bar if you don't stop crying.
Yeah, that's not. Yeah, using food as a reward is a tricky thing because candy is a really fun reward, but we want to try to steer away from that.
Yeah.
Because it can get out of control pretty quick.
Yeah.
So.
I was definitely a candy hoarder as a kid because I didn't feel like I got it enough. So I actually stole Lifesavers from the store when I was 3 years old.
We were 3?
My dad made me take them back and apologize.
3?
Yes. You guys, I have a problem with sweets.
But you know what? She's a great baker.
I am.
She made gluten-free cinnamon rolls this morning and they're bomb. So I don't think it's a problem. It's fine.
It's fine. Yes.
Okay. Let's see what this one says. Can you... Can you explain kids who don't have any post-rotary nystagmus and what to help with that? Well, they're not processing vestibular inputs.
Yes.
Vestibular systems in our inner ear canal. And something's just funky.
Yeah. So here's what we like to do. Two parts to this. Number one, we haven't had swings in our clinic for about a year now. So we haven't been able to do any swinging. It's been rough, but we've come up with other ways to target this. But I would look into the astronaut training program.
Yes.
My dad actually just made us.
I'm so excited
on board.
When's it coming?
We're going to go pick it up next weekend.
Yes.
Yeah. The astronaut training program, it will give you the explanation in the book of the specific series of exercises to do, what to look for, how to get the post-rotary nystagmus, and then how to continue facilitating it. The vestibular system, when you're working on it with the astronaut training board, it's intense.
Mm.
Expect
adverse reactions.
Expect regression before progression is what I always like to say.
Yeah.
And expect those adverse reactions. I mean, I have a lot of adverse reactions with rotary vestibular input.
I love it.
Yes. You can handle it all day.
My post-rotary nystagmus is
perfect. Yeah. Rub it in.
We just need to do more.
I know. I do need to do more.
So you definitely the astronaut training. More vestibular input.
Mm-hmm.
Followed by probe.
Yes.
And incorporate some visual components into the vestibular. One of my kids is incessant about gaming, computer, keyboard, and he keeps asking every day, all day. I would say create a specific time when he is allowed to do that so he knows when he can.
Yep. And then if he keeps asking, say, you know what? You tell me when you get your game time.
Yeah, remind me when.
And then they can maybe work on telling time if they don't know time already. They can figure out, oh, I have 30 more minutes until I get to play on the computer. And then set a time limit so they have 30 minutes to play on the computer and then it's going to turn off. Mm-hmm. Use the, if they're using a tablet or an iPhone, they have guided access, which we just learned about, which is really cool. You can set that up in your settings on an iPhone or a tablet.
My phone is freaking out.
It will automatically turn the app off when it's done, and then it will automatically keep them in one certain app so they can't escape it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think a visual schedule is going to be really good here too, so they can have, they know when they're going to get to do it.
Yeah, but honestly, you guys, video games are like cocaine for these kids, and we have a podcast episode coming out.
Oh, your mom's watching this.
Oh, good. Mom, I was just talking about...
You're gonna need to go back and listen to Rachel blame you for her candy addiction. Because she did.
What was I saying?
Cocaine.
Oh, yeah. Our podcast episode is going to be coming out about screen time.
Oh,
it's probably out if you're listening to the podcast now.
That's true.
We're talking about screen time and how to deal with it, how to eliminate it, reduce it, modulate it, whatever you want to do with your screen time. So that'll be out. I think it'll be out next week. Okay, we'll talk about that.
So we did get a question about sensory processing disorder in tweenies.
Yes.
And your response was, of course.
I don't have a research study in front of me, but my guess would be 90% of babies who are born prematurely.
I would say 95.
I was just trying to be easy.
100%.
Most babies born premature have some sort of sensory processing challenges. It might not be diagnosed sensory processing disorder. It might not present as an extreme case, but most of our kiddos that we treat, that we learn about, that we're following, have some sort of sensory processing challenge.
Mm-hmm.
So definitely connected. You know, we have a sensory deck. It's not our checklist, but Sensational Brain has an over-responsive checklist on their website. So you can fill that out if you are curious about it.
Mm-hmm. And it's broken up into ages, so you can get the 0 to 3 years or the 3+ years one.
But the question actually was talking about primitive reflex integration, and they were working on primitive reflex integration.
Oh, right, because the child was like 4 years old.
Trying to figure out if it was primitive reflexes or sensory integration. And they go hand in hand. Yes. So if you can work on getting the primitive reflexes integrated, and then if there are still sensory processing concerns, address those from a sensory standpoint, then we'll probably see a little bit more progress. But if you're just kind of dabbling here and there, we might not get a lot of progress.
Yeah, and you need to do it every day.
Intense.
It needs to be consistent.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Let's transition, since we were just talking about primitive reflexes.
Mm-hmm.
Today's February 1st.
Yes.
Which means that Sensory Project Club is open.
It's open.
So, so go sign up if you're not already signed. If you are signed up for the club, thank you.
Yeah. Because it's an investment in yourself. And we've had people say they don't have time to go through all the resources. And that's okay. But just know that when you're signing up, you have to do the work.
That's true. You have to get in there. You have to look and see what's there. You have to watch the videos. You have to read.
Yes. You have to be in it to win it. Our members asked for content. So we have put more content in there.
Yes.
We left. So in January we started our Primitive Reflex series. So we have a testing guide. We have resources. We have a calendar.
Everything
for primitive reflexes. And so the next couple of months we're carrying out all of our primitive reflex integration activities.
And different ways to use the exercises, right?
Yes.
So there's specific exercises to help integrate those primitive reflexes, but we want to turn them into games and activities to make them fun and motivating. So you're going to get a new exercise each month. Right now there's 2 exercises in there.
Mm-hmm.
And then we also give you a whole bunch of ideas on how to turn them into games to make them fun.
And then we do live videos like this
in the Facebook group.
And we show you exactly how we do the exercises with our kiddos and kind of some modifications and things like that. So,
yes.
That's what we do in
there. So go sign up.
It's like these live videos on steroids.
But I'm a lot nicer.
I'm just kidding.
You're getting all the club members.
You're just feisty today.
I don't know why. That's the cinnamon roll.
Okay.
Well, you guys, thanks for joining us and asking us all the questions.
Great questions.
Such good questions on both of them. We're live on 2 places, you guys, in case you didn't know.
Yes. Okay.
That's it.
Adios.
We're out. Okay, bye.
We are so excited to work together and to help create confident kids all over the world and work towards a happier, healthier life. This is general information related to occupational therapy, pediatrics, sensory integration, and overall health and wellness. We do not know you or your child, therefore, we do not know any specific needs, therefore, you should always refer back to your pediatrician and occupational therapist.